Steve Kerr. You're on 95.7 The Game with Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky. Coach, it's good to have you on today. Thank you for joining us. Take us into your locker room last night. You certainly all sounded confident today. Where are you standing?
Well, we're down 2-1. I mean, it's pretty simple. So let's go out and get a win and change the momentum again, just like we did in game two. And that's how these series go. You know, we've been doing this for a long time, and we've seen pretty much everything. So everything changes after a game, and you just have to lock in on the next game and do your job and see what happens.
Steve, the plan is to play Clay in game four. How difficult? Did you almost have to save him from himself? Of course he wanted to play. How hard was it to sell him on not playing?
Yeah, it was difficult to tell Clay that he wasn't playing. It was not a difficult decision for us because, you know, a guy has a tweaked hamstring, and there's a serious risk that if we throw him out there last night that he tweaks it worse and then he's done for the whole series. So this was an opportunity for us to give him 4 days of rest, you know, from the time he injured it to the time he goes back out onto the court tomorrow night, and just take away as much of that risk as possible. There's still the chance that it could happen, but an extra 2 days of healing and treatment is really going to pay off. So this was a decision we made. But no, it was not easy for Clay. That's for sure. He was dying to be out there.
And one more housekeeping question for me, Steve, before I pass the mic around the room. You said today that there was no setback for Kevin Durant. You're obviously not happy with him passing a physical threshold. Can you tell us about the workout which determined he would not be suiting up for game four either?
Well, that didn't happen. There wasn't a workout that made that determination. It's just a daily ritual where Kevin comes in, he gets his work in with Rick Celebrini and the training staff, and then he gets out on the court and he does his court work. And, you know, the problem is I'm literally asked this question by the media 5 times a day, and every single thing I say is picked apart. And if I had to do it over again, I would just say, I'm not answering the question. I'll just tell you when he's going to be back, because this thing is getting picked apart detail by detail. The only thing you need to know is that he's not ready to play tomorrow, but he's getting better, and there's absolutely a chance he could play later in the series.
Is there any kind of minutes restriction on Thompson tomorrow night, or is it really just what you see and how you feel as the game develops?
Yeah, it's just how he feels and how the game's going. So, that training staff told me today there's no minutes restriction. It's really all based on how he's doing out there.
And how hard was it for you to convince him that, well, you're not playing? I mean, how much of a fight did he put up?
He put up a big fight, but he understood the reasoning.
Yeah.
You know, if we throw him out there last night and he pulls the hamstring and he's done, I would never forgive myself. I know Clay would not be thrilled either. And so he understood the reasoning. And Bob and Rick and I basically triple teamed him. He had no chance. He couldn't get out of the swarm we put on him.
So this was a triangle in one.
It was a triangle in one, exactly.
I don't know. Frankly, I think I still take Clay at this point. No disrespect, Steve, but I mean, he's got a few years on you, I think. Maybe 1-on-3, he's okay there.
But if they're triple teaming him, is that a threesome now? I heard you talking about twosomes, threesomes.
Yeah, troika. I think it's a troika.
Elegantly dodged.
So let me step to your team defense, which obviously there are obvious reasons why it probably wasn't as good as you were hoping last night based on who's available to you. But going through all the post-game stuff, one of the things that stands out is how many just corner threes you guys gave up just in terms of attempts last night, which obviously is something you don't want to do. Was there a particular execution aspect? Is there something you look at that we let this happen over and over again to create that situation?
Yeah, they diced us up pretty well last night, and there's always sort of a domino effect. So if you make a mistake in one area, then it can lead to three passes that lead to a corner three or an open three. And so there were several things that we saw on the tape that were very obvious that we've got to improve upon. And I think our guys played really, really hard last night. They competed like crazy, but we got broken down and at the point of attack. And if you get broken down at the point of attack or the point of the screen, now you're scrambling behind the play and somebody's going to be open, especially with a good passing team like Toronto. So that's, pretty much the gist of it, and we got to do a better job tomorrow night.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. DeMarcus had a tough game three after doing some real work in game two. Was that his inability to get his legs back underneath him, or is that the length and the defense of the Raptors, which was, it was everywhere?
Well, it's a combination of everything. Clay not being out there also, took away from DeMarcus's game because, they have a real good connection with Clay's cutting and DeMarcus's passing and screening. So it was just a lot of things. I think the big thing is, if a guy misses 6 weeks in the regular season and he comes back, you don't expect him to be back 100% right away. He's going to have a bad game, a good game, a bad game, and it's going to take a week or two to really find the rhythm. But, it's the finals, so the microscope is on him and everybody else. It was a tough night for him and for all of us, but another one tomorrow, so he's got a chance to bounce back.
I hate to go back to Oracle Hospital, but there was a quasi-development on Kevon Looney. Is that a thin reed to stand on, or is there a real possibility that he might make an appearance before this is over?
Possibility. Basically, we got a second opinion. It's a tricky injury. It's a fracture of the cartilage that connects, as I understand it, that connects the collarbone to the sternum. And so, the original diagnosis we got was this is going to be a few weeks, and it's series ending, I should say. I guess it's the same thing. But he, Loon is dying to play. We got a second opinion. He's going through some testing today and tomorrow. So I think there's a real chance he could be back out there.
Steve, with all the scouting that you guys have put in on the Raptors, is there a singular Toronto performance that has stood out to you as something you weren't expecting, or that guy just, has changed your opinion of who you thought he was before you started playing against him in the NBA Finals?
No. In fact, in the words of the great Denny Green, they are who we thought they were. Something like that. Is that how it went?
Yeah, they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Yeah,
that was me pounding the table.
I don't know if we let them off the hook. I think it took a couple games for us to get a feel, maybe a game and a half to get a real feel for, what they were trying to accomplish, what their team's about. You need game experience for that. The tape doesn't do it justice. And I think we've adapted and adjusted. So we're well aware of the threats, well aware of how well-rounded they are. They pass really well from multiple positions. They got a lot of three-point shooters. Kawhi Leonard's a superstar. Marc Gasol, excellent passing center and can score as he did last night and in game one. So there's no surprises.
So this obviously is not a surprise because we've seen it ever since he came on the floor as a rookie pretty much, but watching Kawhi Leonard, among the many things that stand out to me is just the incredible physical strength. And I feel like you watch both Clay and Draymond, two of, in my view, the strongest guys for their size in the league, but Kawhi just seems on a total other level. And I'm just wondering if there's a comparison you can think of for a guy who, sure, he looks strong, but he doesn't look like Anthony Mason, and he just seems to have a physical impact that is way beyond how he looks.
Yeah, I think that's something that maybe doesn't show itself on TV as well as it does live courtside. I mean, he's incredibly strong, got huge hands, big wingspan, and really good footwork too. That's where he's really come into his own. During the NBA, I watched him at San Diego State, and you know, nobody could see this coming. You know, he was a 27% three-point shooter, didn't handle the ball much. So what the Spurs did with him development-wise, you know, down there was amazing. His jump shot has become really, you know, routine for him and solid, but his footwork is brilliant, and you combine that with the strength, and he's a load.
Were you disappointed that after all the hours upon hours of tape you must have watched and practice time you spent, that Nick Nurse didn't go back to the box and won in game three?
That was no surprise. you know, box and one is so gimmicky, and it worked well. I thought it was a great move by Nick, and it worked well in game two, but, you know, you look at the tape, and one of the reasons we don't play much zone, every once in a while we'll throw one out there, but it's terrifying. You give up so many good shots, but the whole point of it is to, you know, throw the defense out of rhythm if they're in a good, or throw the offense out of rhythm. You know, if they're in a good groove against your man-to-man, you know, maybe you change it up, and that's what they did, kind of in desperation mode. But that's not a defense in the NBA that you're going to play very often, that's for sure.
This is more of a philosophical question, but you just brought it up and it sparked something. Are you philosophically down on zones, or do you just don't think that they are very effective for long periods of time in the NBA?
We tinkered with one this year, and I believe in zones, as I said, as a way to alter the rhythm of the game. But if you have a good defense, which I think we do, we have a very good defense, man-to-man-wise, I think a zone, you're kind of shortchanging your players because you are almost guaranteed to give up shots against the zone, three-point shots, if a team knows what it's doing. And the only way you can really get away with it is if a team is pretty shorthanded on shooting. And so even though we've thought about it, we've tinkered with it, we've done it a few times, it's just scary in the modern NBA where everybody has multiple three-point shooters.
On the Nick Nurse topic, Steve, I want to make this more of a general question because you don't need to comment specifically about him, but watching it and listening to commentary about this finals and the Raptors playoff run in general, he gets a lot of credit for creativity, and I feel like there are times that I see that in what he's doing. Obviously, the box and one being a good example of it. As you're coaching, particularly in playoff series where there is so much back and forth adjustment, how often are you thinking to yourself, oh, that was a really clever, creative thing the opposing coach did? Like, do you think about it as sort of a chess game in that respect?
Yeah, and I think that's true in every series. You know, you see an after timeout play that a guy runs, and you know, maybe you see a defensive rotation or something, a move that they make. But that's, you know, that's what the league is about. You got great coaches, you got the best players in the world, and so there's a lot of creativity, and usually it's subtle enough where, you know, fans wouldn't recognize it unless it's like a box and one, something dramatic. But, you know, all these coaches are really good. These players are really good. And we all learn from each other. You know, we've stolen plays from other people. Other people have stolen plays from us. It's just kind of how the league operates because we all watch each other work.
Golden State Warrior head coach Steve Kerr ahead of Game 4 of the NBA Finals tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. In Game 3, Steph Curry was phenomenal. I mean, he had 47 last night. He shot it 31 times. And Steve, there's very little doubt in my mind that if Steph wanted 30 shots a night throughout the regular season, he would lead this league in scoring, and he'd probably do so by a wide margin and easily. It's one of those, like, the only guy who can slow down Michael Jordan was Dean Smith. I think the only guy who can slow down Steph Curry is, you know, his willingness to share the ball.
I say me.
I'm not going to put it on you. I'm not going to put it on you. I will.
Yeah, I think, you know, the beauty of Steph is that he's all about the team. He's all about winning. There's a reason he was recruiting Kevin Durant, you know, three summers ago. The more good players you have, the better chance you have to win. You know, and if you can put together three or four great players on one team, now you can win a championship. So that's what Steph's about. Last night was a reminder to everybody out there that when Steph doesn't have a whole lot of offensive help, he can completely take over and deliver one of the great performances in finals history. I mean, it's he's that gifted, that talented. So the best thing about Steph, he doesn't get caught up in any of this stuff. You know, probably the same people, you know, who were saying that, you know, he needed Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson to be great are the same ones who were saying, oh, see, you know, Steph can't do it on his own. He had 47, but they lost. You know, there's no matter how you slice it, there's just going to be judgment and criticism. And Steph's great about just not worrying about any of that and just playing.
That said, how awkward did he feel being put in a position that, frankly, as a pro, has been unusual for him, in which he basically has had to become the guy, and for not just a period of a game, but a full game? I mean, I don't know if you can read into body language or whether he ever said anything, but it wasn't that he couldn't do it, it's just that he's never really shown any desire to do it. And all of a sudden, he's put in a situation where he has no choice but to do it.
There was nothing awkward about it. I think he relished it, and I think he knew exactly what our team needed from him if we were going to win, and he did it. So he's comfortable with whatever we ask of him, that's for sure.
Steve, Kyle Lowry jumping into the stands. Obviously, an inglorious night for minority ownership for the Golden State Warriors. How awkward is this for you and your team?
That's very awkward because you know it's unacceptable for any fan to do something like that. You know, there's sort of an agreement, you know, gentleman's agreement that you know, players are there to compete. The fans are there to watch. And even though the fans are so close, you know, you cushion their fall if the players are coming, and that's about it. You know, so to hear the news that of what happened was really disheartening. And I know our organization apologized to Kyle and to the Raptors. And yeah, it's very, very unfortunate.
Let's end on a really positive note as you go into game four with Klay Thompson, hopefully giving us one more game back at Oracle in game six, because got to win one of these two to make sure that's going to happen. Steve, you mentioned that in high school you saw a box and won. What were you averaging your senior year of high school? What'd you drop on the world?
This was actually my freshman year in high school.
So you were just tearing it up that night. You must have been cutting into ribbons.
Something like that. But I'm just glad I finally have something in common with Steph Curry. So, makes me feel good.
What's your best lifetime scoring average?
I have no idea. Probably in college. I was not a huge scorer, so I think I averaged 15 in college. That was probably the most.
I've never averaged 15 of anything. So I'm impressed. I really am.
All right.
Steve, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate you talking to us during a day in between games. That's rare, and we're very, very happy that we get to do that with you. Thank you. Good luck tomorrow, and then go get them back in Toronto. And as Draymond said, you just come back here, win game six, and then we party, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.